Step aboard Motor Yacht Unbridled, where elegance meets the open sea. Dive into a world of refined adventure, tailored experiences, and five-star service. From sun-soaked decks to moonlit dinners, every moment on Unbridled is designed to indulge your senses, whether it's an intimate escape or a celebration of a lifetime. Unbridled, where the extraordinary is standard.
Yep. Anyway, my name is Captain Liam Devlin, Motor Yacht Unbridled. It's a 191 Trinity, available for charter, currently in Costa Rica, and we're making our way up the coast to Alaska. And I'm really excited today to be in a captain's chat with Joy Weston, who we've just talked about that how long we've been in the industry. But it's not so much the years, it's how the respect and kind of how well we've worked together over those years that I'm kind of more excited about without putting the numbers to it, Joy. Because we're both still young at heart.
That's it, exactly.
All right. So tell us, just introduce yourself, Joy, and we'll kind of start from there.
Okay. Obviously, I'm Joy Weston from Crew Pacific. We're based in Cairns, Australia. We've been established now for 25 years. Crew Pacific provides two services, which is recruitment to luxury super yachts worldwide. Plus, we offer elementary stewardess, deck, chef, introductory training courses, which helps to get the young people and the newbies coming into the industry in the right way. Very much so.
That chef one is really, they're all really important because so many people want to join yachting, but they're not getting the actual quality information they need to assist in the transition. So the chef one, tell me about that, because that's a big one. I came from, if you remember, I came from Byron Bay from a restaurant family, so father, two brothers.
That's right, you did too, gosh. So I've collaborated it with Chef Lisa Mead, which has been a chef on yachts for 28 years. Obviously known her for as many years as I've known you. I won't say those years. and basically Lisa actually developed the 7-day introductory chef course. And it's a course that we're not here teaching them to be chefs. They've already done their chef apprenticeship. It's that introductory into yachting, the provisioning side, you know, the storing and stowing of the yacht, the food requirements, the demands that are needed, working in remote places. And then obviously I come into it with all the B1 and B2 visas and their CVs, their menu planning, how to register properly with crewing agents, how they should, you know, get started, all the agents to use, the correct agents, the recommended agents to use to get out there, and the platforms like even yacht management companies to use to increase their employment opportunities. Obviously, my job once they're trained is to place them, but I do like them to have, I suppose, to be proactive and get out there and try and find work on their own as well, because not always am I going to have those jobs. But the chef role is just, it's a great job and it's a great course with what we're doing.
But it's a really challenging environment. I mean, for any crew member, yes, but chefs in particular, they seem to have, you know, they seem to have a real tough time adjusting a lot of times because they're used to these high stress environment with a lot of people, and then they kind of come into yachting, it's just one or two of them in the department with the chief stew as opposed to a whole restaurant platform. So the course you're doing is really important, but also not just for chefs, maybe the sous chefs or there's usually two or three chefs now in the 100-meter yachts and also crew chefs on small
vessels. Yeah, so we're doing so we're offering now also a 10-day stew cook/chef course as well. So obviously for the smaller vessels or like you say, they can come in a stew crew cook chef or sous chef. So there's quite a few options for crew to do. And I think what I found in the industry, especially after COVID, was a really big shortage of stew cooks or crew cooks coming into the industry. Just hard to find. So this is another reason of bringing the course in. And also finding good chefs that can cross over from restaurants with the right attitude into yachting. That's the biggest thing. And as you know and we know in yachting, chefs have the full control in a restaurant. Not necessarily do they have that in the galley of a yacht because it's the chief stew that sort of delegates with what food's needed to be, well, and when it needs to go out to the table and what's required. So there's a lot of factors that is very different to the restaurant life.
Very much so. Even captains come in with their feedback, and then you've got the crew expectations, and it is one of the hardest jobs. But, and thank you so much for your time, Joy. I'm really honoured to have you here and also reconnect. But the other reason we reconnected this last week is because Unbridled is looking for a new chief officer. And I'm a believer in transparency. I'm a believer in being proactive. Now, it's big shoes to fill. We had a previous chief officer for 2 years who'd been on board for 5 years.
Wow.
Currently we haven't. And I kind of don't like filling crew's shoes. When a crew member leaves, whatever the situation, I try and say, look, let's not try and fill that person's role or that person's style of management or job, because everyone's different. And I think a good crew, which I'm currently blessed to have one, and I've worked for a lot of great crews or with a lot of great crews, is everyone's going to find their strengths and weaknesses. And you've got to work on their weaknesses and, you know, and encourage their strengths to share them. So I now have to go back to the drawing board as kind of like a captain coach and work with you and say, all right, what is the person I need? And what are those kind of skill sets? I have a wonderful interim chief officer who has his master 3,000 ton, and I've been to sea with him over the last 9 years on 3 different yachts. So I'm fine now, and I've got a charter, so I'm really blessed to have those relationships. But I'm kind of interested about your thoughts on that role for the audience. So when a captain approaches you, you asked me some really good questions, itinerary. But the one you asked that stood out the most was MLC compliance. And you asked me for my MLC compliance certificate. And that's when I went, all right, take my hat off. That's why I love Joy Weston. And tell everyone a little bit about that, because no one else has reached out to me for that document.
Okay. I suppose when I got my MLC, which is about, good 7 to 10 years ago, I lost count, it was more about showing to yachts at a commercial or charter that I'm serious about finding the right crew, looking after, not just looking after the vessel and the captain, but the crew as well. I always say it's not a one-way street. It's a two, sometimes three-way street, really, to make sure. The MLC is quite a process. as I'm working with AMSA, our Australian Maritime Safety Authority body. But once we've got it, it's more about showing that I'm serious and finding the right crew and the crew that can suit. And it's not just the qualifications, as we know. It's also their personality, their attitude, how active they are and proactive with what they want to do, and that they have a passion for the ocean. I think that's the biggest thing.
That's what seems to come with your candidates. They seem, from myself, from a young age, it's, I suppose in Australia when you grow up, you've got a lot of career choices and, you know, a lot of opportunities. We're very fortunate to have a very good country like that. And I think the ones that choose the ocean, it's not that they have to or there's benefits per se. There's usually not a lot of benefits because we're so far away. But the ones that choose it generally come from a passion or for myself diving, fishing, and my parents and my grandparents. So the MLC is important because it gives structure and stability. But so people are aware out there, you know, as a captain, there's a lot of ways we look for crew. And now with social media, it's really become easier and easier for crew to approach. And even on that comment that I made on Instagram, there was someone saying they want to do a transition from commercial to yachting. That's when I kind of circle back and say, go to Joy Weston or go to one of the crew agencies to go through the right path. Because it's easy as a captain accepting people with hope and saying, I've got a good feeling about this. This is going to work and it's a good wage and the owner's going to be happy. That's not the right approach. The right approach, I've always thought, is hire slow. Take months, go through the process, you know? And I find we get good quality candidates that way. So what's your kind of advice?
Well, it's a bit like what I do with recruitment. I take time with my registration, with the crew registering. I'm very thorough with that. The more I'm hands-on with them, as much as it's a lot of work behind the scenes, you know, getting them into the database and the system and reference checking. The more I deal with them, the more I get to know them as a person and how they are and how proactive they are.
Yes.
If I have issues with them along the way, registering or excuses of why they can't provide written references or referees, then I start getting the red flag, alarm bells going on, da-da-da-da. I always give them the benefit of the doubt, but then if, you know, if it's not happening over the next few months, so I might dangle a carrot, which is a job, and it's like, well, get off your bum and because if you don't, I'm not putting you forward. There's something going on there, and then I dig a little deeper and I always find something out.
That's it. And the red flags, unfortunately for crew, they're out there. Like it's and we're very efficient professionals. This is our career. You know, Joy Wilson, crew placement is your career. Me as a captain, it's number one, it's my life. So when I choose crew, I say, who am I going to end up in the life raft with? That's what I always think.
Correct.
That's the lowest common denominator I've got as crew is, all right, crew, this is us and we're crossing an ocean and aluminum's only 10 mil or steel's 10 mil thick and there may be a day where we end up together in a life raft. So let's prepare for it. We've got some questions coming in and we've got a young lady here called Sophia. If you could just pick up a little bit, Sophia, and we've got a question for you here, Joy.
Yeah. Susan Porta has asked, can your intro chef and stew cook courses be taken remotely by logging into live classes or no?
No, they can't. We do a part of our training is theory from at home, and there's theory tasks that we get them to do at home with all of our courses, including the chef and the stew cook. But unfortunately, they have to come to Cairns to the training facilities to finish off the practical side.
For now. You never know.
George. Yeah, look, it'll come into the future where we can do that. I'm a big believer as I really like to see what people are capable of doing. And, yes, you can do that online to some degree, but you can. I like to also figure out the personalities that we're working with when we're doing the practical. There's a lot of practicals that we do that you're working in a team environment, and that shows if you can work on a yacht in a good team environment and how you handle stressful situations. So we do quite a bit of a training in that area to make sure that they are suited to yachting. It's not just training them to be a stewardess, a deck or a cook or a chef. It's everything else that comes with it, with the working and living on board of the super yacht.
True, very much so. Very well-rounded answer. And Suzanne Porter, you know, hello, Suzanne. You're a lovely person. I can't wait to work with you again and great question. You have another question there, Sophia?
Lilia has asked, how do you deal with clashes like different personalities or age gaps that can happen on board?
That's probably to me because it's on board. And that goes back to what you're saying kind of, Joy, is about the personality. What's the captain looking for? What's his management style? So to answer it first, Sophia, who asked the question?
Lilia.
Good question, Lilia. Firstly, when I employ crew, I try and get them to fill out a little questionnaire, and that's usually a two-year, five-year plan, what they're looking for in a captain. And my answers to that question, what they're looking for, really gives me an insight into do they want a teacher? Do they want someone to focus on safety? Do they want someone to go down that path? But personality clashes are real, 100%. 25 years in yachting, people ask me about below decks and I say, it's all real. It just doesn't happen in that week. It happens over a year or two or 25 years, Joy. And you on the back end have heard your stories where captains have called you and says, abort mission. We need to, we need to replace some crew. Because it's a stressful environment. So when they do, the first thing I try to do as a captain myself is I have a zero tolerance policy for crew politics. I really am, whether it's good or bad, results driven. So, but the moment it starts affecting the results of the team or the individual, that's when I get involved. And when I find out that it's a personality clash, the best is just to bring the different parties into the room. And I don't want to say hash it out, but to have them understand that the different, and either together or not, have them understand that it's okay to be different. It's an inclusivity we're working on in yachting. We need a long way to go to bring all different personality types and different other things into yachting. But when it's simply just a personality, is it that important? And if it's that important for you, then try and work on it and how to respect someone else's personality. Because we have it every, you know, not every week, but you have it every month or two where two people just do not get on. And I usually say, it's okay. That's great you don't get on. But let's just focus on your job. Because if you've got time to be distracted about someone else's personality, then maybe we're missing some things.
And exactly. And I think also it depends on the nationality, how they are, respecting each other's cultures different ways. And I think that's really important. We've all got to, we all have our moments, just for sure, in writing, for sure.
Happens everywhere.
But it's just addressing it as an adult and respecting each other's ways and trying to work around it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, did you have any insight? Because we're dealing with both levels here. We're talking about that chief officer role, but we're also talking about, you know, your advice for captains. Because there's a lot of captains and brokers and industry people out there that also want to understand the process. Because the more successful a broker can be, helping a captain choose the crew that even the broker wants. And I know I work with brokers and they need certain people. Like right now, this current charter. We've got a masseuse on board who's a second steward. We've got a fishing guide who's the, you know, the bosun slash fishing guide. They're specifically employed for this charter. Hopefully long term it works, but I usually keep about 20% or 15% of the crew of the 14 ready to adjust for what the client wants. And the client's the charter brokers and the owner. And that's tough for me because that's when I have to deal with the personality differences, the new crew coming in. What are the different expectations? But my charter client and the broker are going to get a world-class masseuse. They're going to get a world-class fisherman, and we're going to have a great time in Costa Rica. So what's your advice for the more upper-level individuals in the yachting industry, whether it's brokers, owners, other captains and heads of department? What's your advice for them looking for crew?
Look, I think when they're looking for crew, and especially if it's obviously through Crew Pacific, is give as much information to the agent as you can about what you're looking for, but what the crew are all about as well. Okay. And just I think so that we can go through that process of trying to find and match the right person. And even if we are, when we do provide a CV, for me, I love feedback from the captain or the broker or the person. So I can make sure I can nail it down more to finding that right person for that position. I think that's the biggest thing for me and for the client is to communicate. And the more they do, the more chance I'm going to find that perfect person with them. Now, as we know, not captains can also not get along with the owners after three months of vacation. It's really handy when owners or captains coming to me for crew and they're not getting along with the crew or the crew aren't gelling in the first month is to come and communicate with me and talk to me about it. Obviously, I'm not always going to talk to the crew. I think that's something that the captain would sit down and do. But even if the crew member does come to me to say I'm just not gelling with the boat, I'll ask why and maybe suggest some other approaches on how to make it work and work with that. But I think it's like you said, it comes down to a diversity of different boats, programs.
And it's also the support network too. Like, I mean, mental health. True. Mental health's a big thing now and creating that support wellness. We're working with Xanthi. I'm not sure if you were of her with Wave Wellness.
Yes.
She's been for the crew. We're also working with the crew coach. We're incorporating that into Motion and Bridle, but what I'm noticing is the support the crew need, there's no one size fits all. And I've found crew on Facebook and they've been some of the best crew I've ever had. But when I bring them in, I usually bring them through either a crew agent or someone I know, sometimes when they're young, I'll even speak to their family. When I've had an 18-year-old once, and I said, can I speak to someone who's in your network of people older than you that can communicate to me so there's a form of understanding there?
I love that.
because it's a scary environment and for your crew, and I've got a young daughter and I'm worried. You know, when I see these things in the dock, crew drinking, having a good time, partying, I wouldn't want, you know, some of the crew that I work with in those environments.
No, no, not at all. And it is about well-being too, and I'm glad to hear that you're doing that because it's so important, more so these days and I think in our day, with everything with social media and everything going on, it's so important.
Yeah, and then the tough question, rotation, because I'm 25 years in yachting, I haven't done rotation yet. I am really passionate about what I do, and I don't know what I would do if I did have rotation.
I'd be driving my family nuts, Liam.
Yeah, I know, I know, I know. My family have always wanted it, but I've always gone to sea. You know, I've worked on beautiful yachts, and it really is. It's what I wake up for every day, and it's hard balance for me, that one. But that's my baggage. Yeah. That's my issue. But now with FaceTime and internet, the family, we do spend a long time together, and I've got a good understanding with the owner, so it's a good balance for me. I get the best of both. But the rotation thing, where it's time for time. What's the negatives of it? Let's start there, Joy. What's the negatives of it? Because everyone talks about the positives, but I think there's another side to it. And the side I usually start with is from the owner's side. When I speak to owners about rotation, it's always, well, we want one person to deal with and we don't want to pay two people for the same job. So what do you see as the negative?
That's definitely one of the negatives. The owners have to, you know, pay two salaries. And I suppose the hardest part for the owners is to find two captains or two first officers or two chief stews that they can communicate clearly with. And when the crossover happens, the handover from rotation happens, there's good communication between both of them before just leaving the boat. I think that's the most important part, is good manuals in place, operational manuals in place, good communication between the ones handing over, not just rushing out the door, so to speak, or rushing off the boat and going, I'll leave them to deal with that.
Do you place any rotational roles, or do you see a trend? I do a bit.
I actually do a lot of not as much as I'd like, but yeah. I do a few. Probably about 10 a year in rotation on different boats. I think more so because of the yachts being on the South Pacific region, it's a long way from home for some of these, you know, crews. So they do a probably 2 months on, 2 month off swing. Probably about 6 months ago, placed a young girl I trained in the stew deck course. She managed to get the most awesome job, the job I would always have dreamed of having. three on, one off, which Lovely. Was fantastic as a junior stew. She's still on there, having an absolute ball. Awesome, awesome crew, awesome setup, very similar setup to what you guys have got with Unbridled.
Yeah, we really try, just sorry to interrupt you, is put the crew, because we run seasons, summer and winter season, I really try and tell the crew, look, pretend it's 5 months on, 1 month off. Just pretend it's. And then let's work on that 1 month off and where you're going to go, where's your holidays. Don't look for this 12-month vision. It's too far ahead. Let's build a season, execute the season, and take a break. And it's also if it's leave without pay, it's a similar, you know, ideally we all have to increase the standard in yachting for the way we look after crew. From a wage perspective, from a mental health perspective, from a leave perspective, from a social security and retirement perspective, financially. There's a lot more communities coming out now, which is great, but there's still not really the structure that the junior crew need to say, all right, this is the path. We're going to look after you for your retirement, or we're going to give you a good medical insurance for 10 years through different vessels.
Yeah.
It's more like go into the Wild West, figure it out. You can do Europe or Australia or America, and that's up to you. Good luck.
Well, the good thing is with and sorry to revert back to training again, but that's something I do teach in the training, is setting their futures up, not just their qualifications and a career in yachting, is setting up their bank accounts correctly, taxes, dealing with their super and stuff coming back here to Australia, or they don't half the time you have no idea where you're going to live. Jeez, yeah. I probably had no idea. Yeah. I didn't even know I was going to be in Cairns. I'm a bit of a trader because I'm originally from New Zealand. So it's one of those things. But I think I do cover a lot of don't just think about now and coming into the yachting industry, but as you work your way up, your salaries are going to be more, your benefits are going to be better. And yeah. then, you know, you're investing in property or whatever to think about what you're doing. And I give them information to work out their taxes and their super and set themselves up if they do come back to Australia.
Oh, good. Glad to say. And yeah. That's why I think you have a really unique platform. Like, it's companies like yourself, Northrop & Johnson, and, you know, there's a lot of other people out there as well, individual crew placements that have a vested.
Well, we're all passionate about the industry.
Yeah, and you've got a vested interest, and there's so many of them. Amy, Yara, the list goes on and on. There's so many beautiful and, you know, I want to say women in a sense, because majority are in that support group of crew placements, and it's hard to stand out and say one's better than the other because they all have a unique skill.
I'm a bias. I'm for Amy Ari.
Yeah, Amy Ari. Suzanne Porter, you know.
Yeah, she's Marcy a big Williams, mentor to me, Amy.
She's at Northrop & Johnson for Marcy Williams this week. I mean, she's just a beautiful soul. So there's a lot to the yachting industry, but rely on these people because what you've seen over the years. So let me ask you another difficult one. What happens if there's a red flag you see in a captain? And you can be as honest or transparent as you want to be, but I know there's issues in the industry with people who have got to certain leadership roles and there's mental or abuse issues or, you know, other work-related issues. What happens when you see that?
Okay, so I suppose with recruitment, I can avoid a lot of bad captains because of the reference checks that I do. And very thorough. I'm a tick all the boxes when it comes to putting them into my database and checking. I really do dig deep. And obviously it comes down to what referees they've got on their CV. If they have written references, if they're saying to me, oh, I've never got written references from my previous jobs, I get alarm bells. Sometimes I even reach out to their referees to see if they can provide a written reference, and 99% of the time they do.
Yeah.
And that's when I say to the captain that they're being lazy, not getting off their butt to get this. They feel that they don't need to. So I'm a bit firm with some of the captains, Liam. And first officers as well.
That's what I like.
Yes, you've done your time in yachting, but hey, you've still got to pick up your socks, pick up your boots, and put them on, and provide the information. I also say that that when you come to me for crew, you expect me to give written references and referee checks to you and vet the crew. So I have to do the same with you. And if you're not prepared to do it, then don't register with me.
Yeah, good on. Well done, Joe, because it is a responsibility you have, I suppose, not contractually, but if you're putting a crew member into a situation where you know of an issue and it happens again, I mean, it becomes all of a sudden your reputation that starts to go, well, hang on, I use that crew agent. So it's a two-way street, I guess.
Oh, it is definitely. And, you know, that's the negative part of being a crewing agent when it comes to putting senior crew, especially captains, to owners, is they're trusting you to find the right person. But at the same time, it's the other way around too. It's the captain trusting you to find the right owner. And there's some bad owners out there as well as good. We all know that in the industry. And it's making sure that the owners are looking after the captains. So it's a two-way street. But, you know, it's vetting the owners, and it's hard to vet the owners because they're a breed of their own.
Yeah, very much.
And a beautiful breed of their own.
Yeah. I always ask the owners, what's your three things you want off me? Like, I mean, I must have been pretty blessed in my life, and that's why I want to give back to junior crew, to the industry, to charter brokers, to crew placement agencies. I feel like I've been very lucky, and I think you've got a count your blessings in life. And if you've got more blessings than the opposite, then give back and help people. And the owners I've worked for, from even this boat I put on this morning, Beothic, I did the Northwest Passage on it. Carrie Alley, yeah. You know, the Sea Legend, Unbridled. There's just some beautiful boats I've worked for. And as a captain, I've always actually put more value into the boat. When I go for a job, I kind of look for the boat because the owners do change. But is it the boat I want to spend 2 to 5 to 7 to 10 years on? And that's where I've been a bit fortunate, I guess. But a lot of people focus on the itineraries and the crew, the captain even, or the broken terms, or the owner. I kind of think you've got to take all that into consideration. But what do you want? What type of people do you want around you? And that's where I encourage crew to go out there and be a little picky. Don't just take the first job. It's kind of look at that boat, look at that platform, look at that brokerage firm, look at the management company. Ask all these 5 or 6 or 10 questions that you've kind of put out there, Joy, too, so people can make good decisions.
And that's good that you say that, Liam, because that's something I really stress on the training with them starting out, is not to take the first job. To really research the vessel and research the crew as much as you can, and make sure it's the boat that you want, because your first boat, you want to try and stay on there as long as you can. And obviously like 6 months to 12 months that they can do. But, yeah, realistically, I think it's important to interview the boat, interview the captain. I think that's the thing.
Be honest.
You know, captain, you interview the crew, and you have every right to. So does the crew member have every right to. It's just what questions they ask and how diplomatic they are. But also, like you say, don't look at, I like that bit about the itinerary, because a lot of people do look at the itinerary, and it's not the case. They shouldn't. The itinerary is a bonus. It's a sheer bonus. But they should be looking at the crew they're joining, and like you say, how long are they going to stay? Are they going to be there for a short time or a long time? There's lots of stuff that I do. I think it's great. You recently, a few months ago, you do so many blogs on social media, but about the do's and don'ts of a CV, and I just want to say that's fantastic too, Liam, because I actually use that now in every course that I run and play you playing that, because the input. Yeah, and the students, I wish you could be in the classroom to see it. They're taking notes down that you're saying and everything, and they really love it. And now they're becoming, getting onto your Instagram and stuff, and I'm saying to them, research, learn from this.
Yeah, very much so. I appreciate the feedback. I mean, like I said, I just want to give back. I've had a beautiful life and a beautiful career. I love my family, love the ocean, and I see negative things happen in yachting and boats on fire, touch wood, and, incidences with sexual assault and abuse of crew.
Oh, I've seen that too.
And payments not being made. And I keep thinking, come on, people, where's the positivity in all this? Because we are so lucky to work on these unbelievable machines that are some of the greatest engineering feats of mankind, with the technological advances, and we sit in a beautiful bay in the middle of nowhere, and at 6 to 8 in the morning there's no one around, or there's no charter on, or you're in Panama or in Colombia or in Iceland or you name it.
I've been to now you're making me jealous.
Well, yeah, I don't have the lorikeet behind you, but I've missed out on some things. But it is, if you get
there, there's a little question. Do you believe that criminal record checks should be mandatory?
I think it should be more of a global platform. That's my take on it, and I don't know what that looks like, because I'm probably not smart enough in that field to understand it. Like I just work on a yacht. I'm a humble sailor. I love fishing. So I love diving. But I think
agents do have, from time to time, have to do criminal record checks. I have to do a police check on crew, and that comes up depending on the vessel. I don't do it with everyone, but some people do go and get their own police check, and then obviously I have that saved in their file. They need to have it shown to the boat. If the yacht specifically requests me to have any crew they put forward to do that, yes, I'll go out and do that as well.
Yeah. I think it's that and also the drug and alcohol and kind of, you know, a lot of times when people join, I'll show them this is a test that we do randomly, and if something you don't feel comfortable with, then you need to let me know, because it's a path that we want to make sure that all crew are aware that we try and keep a clean and sober ship at all times. That's an important one for me, that one, the drugs and alcohol abuse, because it's
– yeah.
I think people forget that it's not their boat. You know, it's the owner's assets. And when you're using the owner's assets, it's you're responsible in whatever role you have, you know, and that's big. We've got some questions here. We've got a little bit more than what we usually do. I usually only do 15, 20 minutes, but I really love speaking to you, Joy. And, a lot of people, since we discussed on that CV do's and don'ts, a lot of people ask me the questions on the messages, and I'm like, just go see Crew Pacific or see Marcy Williams,
yeah,
or see Susan or see Amy. They're the people with the knowledge. I just know what I know. Yeah, I just know what I know from my experience. But what's the question there, Sophia?
We have a question by Bobby. How long is a reasonable time to get crew trained and qualified for a step up in the industry, starting from a junior role?
Very serious question there, Sophia. Good, well read. What do you think? Depends, like, from a junior role to step up into like maybe a chief officer or a second stewardess. What do you think? Do you think they should leave the boat, do some education, then come back? Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think generally when they're a third stew, they start out, 15 months maybe as a third stew.
Okay.
2 years possibly, longest. Depends on the boat, private or charter. If it's charter, you're learning some pretty top-notch standards.
Yeah.
So maybe 2 years. And then look, see if the boat will put you through some extra training courses to be able to step up to a second stew role on the vessel if there's that opportunity. If there's not the opportunity, then maybe, which is the sad thing, is you have to move on to another boat. And if you do move on to another yacht, go and do some further training. I believe training is the best thing. It educates you. It helps you in your next step up to being a second stew or a chief stew. I'm always a big believer you've got to crawl before you walk and walk before you run.
Yeah.
And step by step is important. It makes you a better manager at the end of the day. It makes you a better crew member. And you have extra skills that you can bring to your owners and the rest of your crew. So I think I'd say probably within 15 months to 2 years, start looking at extra training courses.
I'd say that too, yeah. I'd say that 15 months, perfect, year and a half, 8 months. That 1 to 2 year, you've kind of gone through the learning cycle between you think you know everything or you don't know everything. There's more to learn. I've been in trouble a couple of times. I've done my year.
Yeah.
And then from there to the 2 years, you're really understanding there's a lot more to learn. And I have this saying that is, you don't know what you don't know. So unless you've done the course, you don't know. We've got another question there, and we'll try and wrap it up. So I know you're starting.
Yes, let's do that.
What's the question? Final question, Sophia.
Violetta asks, what role does mental health and well-being play in your selection process, and how are you seeing your yachts address this?
Okay, good question. One's for you. How are you seeing it? What's the question and how are you seeing it?
What role does mental health and well-being play in your selection process, and how are you seeing yachts address this?
Okay, so how are you seeing it in your selection process? Joy, final question.
Oh, it's a tough one. I suppose a lot of yachts, most yachts, it depends on who they're looking for in their crew, but the well-being is important, and obviously that comes across from the captain of what they're wanting in their programs of crew being proactive, fit, addressing times if they are down and out or they need someone to talk to. The captain does address that in behind the scenes when they're talking to me. Yeah. I speak to them about how they address crew with, getting help along the way if they're having any issues with whatever's going on board. It's a tricky one because it really comes down to the individual on board and the captain himself and how the program's running.
That's true, but I think also the industry lacks something here. Like when you look at countries like Australia or England or a lot of these other countries, part of their employment packages is access to these different facilities to make sure that the people have platform to go to. And that's where I think Santhi's done a great job. The crew coach has done a great job.
Yes. Just
people are out there, and the industry is a beautiful industry for that. People are really sprouting out left and right with different platforms to say, we're here to help. We now have the tools. And I think it's naive of captains to think that we might be in trouble here with other captains, but it's naive to think we know it all, because we've got one job, and that's to keep our crew safe.
Yeah. And
when I have a crew member resign, I'm happy for them if it's for a good cause and they want to go progress their career. But a part of me always thinks, what can I now do better? What can I do better? And I ask them probably on their final day or a month later or 3 months later, and they generally don't want to say anything, but then it might come out that, you know what, Captain, you could probably not push so hard at these times. I want good feedback. I appreciate it. Final question. We've got to finish it up, Sophia.
Yep.
Okay. Maria asks, what influences crew to stick around longer instead of bouncing from boat to boat?
Okay. Quick one from me. I think positivity. If the crew are happy and the people around you are happy, the crew stay. If there's good things to do on a day off, the captain encourages it. You don't have to get involved. I don't get involved so much with the crew on the days off, honestly, Joy, because I want them to have their space. They need to be themselves, you know.
But you need your space too.
Yeah, I need my ocean and my family time. I speak to my wife and my daughter, my son. Yeah. What about you? What do you see as crew? What's a big attribute for them staying?
Oh, look, I've worked on yachts myself, so the biggest thing was time off. And when you got the time off, you enjoyed it with your crew. If you chose to step away a day away from your crew, it's not a big problem. I mean, if you're doing it all the time, it could be. But absolutely. I think getting into the gym, being healthy,
true,
getting out, doing stuff, it's not about going to the pub and drinking. It's about getting out, fitness, going and seeing places. You're in some beautiful places when you're on a yacht, and crew seem to want to get with other crew, and there's nothing wrong with it for a night or a day, but for God's sake, if you've got a few days off, get on a bloody car or a motorbike and take off.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the biggest thing for crew, is the well-being, taking time out and smelling the roses, because you live a rich man's bubble.
Yep, very much.
And I say this in my training, you live a rich man's bubble, and it's his dream, not your dream. You're just following the dream.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need to step away and go and buy your own toothpaste, buy your own toilet roll paper and, you know, 2-minute noodles, and just get off and have some time out. Don't get into this, I suppose.
Your days off, you know, enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I used to go horse riding on my days off, or take off on a motorbike with one of the deckies and go off and sleep on the beach. It was crazy.
We've actually got a tent on board. A lot of yachts have had tents on board, and some of the crew are like, can I take it? I said, go for it. And they go up, they camp, they take a radio, or go from there. But anyway, Joy,
We
both got to go. We'll do another one. Anything you need for your platform, let us know. It's Crew Pacific.
Yep.
It's the other side of the world, everyone, but they're really putting together a special platform for crew to learn, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, please do, everyone. Get in touch. I've got a career night going on, if anyone's listening in Australia, but overseas, about how to kickstart your super yacht career. So, you know, join in. We have these career sessions just about every month to help people get educated in the yachting industry. It doesn't mean you have to book into a course, but it certainly will educate you about the industry.
Very much so. All right, Joy, thank you very much.
Take care. See you later.
Bridled, Yachty International Radio, Yachty World, Crew Pacific, and all the beautiful people that support this industry in a positive way. My Northrop Johnson, the owner's team, and once again, safe seas.